So with that, we will wait for the next tour stop to load up. And I'm going to turn it over to Nate Aglesoff. Again, our private forest and center field coordinator. Take it away, Nate.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nate Aglesoff, and welcome to Tour Stop One. I'm also joined today by Jennifer Weichel, wildlife biologist in the ODF Private Forest Program, and online, Lindsay Reeves, co-owner, and today serving as a spokesperson for the Bowman Tree Farm. During the first segment of this tour stop, I'd like to provide the board with a high-level overview of the Stewardship Agreement Program. I'll begin with some historical highlights, and then we'll take a little closer look at how the regulatory framework of the Stewardship Agreement Program can be complementary to other opportunities and provide some examples of how this leveraging of programs can be beneficial to the landowner, partner agencies, and the resource. The Stewardship Agreement Program was originally created by the Oregon Legislature in 1997 and adopted by the Board of Forestry as part of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. When conducting a forest operation, landowners and operators are subject to the rules and requirements of the Forest Practices Act by default. A foundational element of the Stewardship Agreement Program is the recognition that success in natural resource management cannot be achieved by regulation alone, and voluntary actions in combination with legal requirements would lead to more desirable outcomes on the landscape. The program provides a means to recognize the efforts of participating forest landowners and allow some additional latitude for these landowners to self-regulate. Since 1997, the Stewardship Agreement Program has undergone several modifications, but I'd like to take this time to highlight just a few key events along the way, such as in 2003, when Stewardship Agreements became an independent program, which essentially made the program available to both forest and agricultural landowners. And in 2007, the legislation that brought about some of the most significant changes to the Stewardship Agreement Program and shaped it into the current form as we know today by adding the specific benefits of regulatory certainty and regulatory efficiency. Examples of regulatory efficiencies could potentially include allowing the Stewardship Agreement to satisfy any written plan and notification requirements. Regulatory certainty aims to recognize landowners who chose to exceed current regulatory requirements and exempt them from any more restrictive standards in place at a future date. I'll point out that complementary incentives were very valuable in increasing participation in the Stewardship Agreement Program. And in 2009, Oregon held signups for the Healthy Forest Reserve Program, HFRP. And in 2010, ODF entered into the Programmatic Safe Harbor Agreement for the Northern Spotted Owl with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Natural Resource Conservation Service. I'll get a little bit more into the specifics on these complementary opportunities in the coming slides, but what I think you'll find interesting is that the Stewardship Agreement is the tool that provides the necessary linkage between these opportunities for successful program implementation and helps ensure that these incentive programs can be delivered in a stable regulatory environment. The scope of Stewardship Agreements in the Oregon Forest Practices Act in Division 21 provides a framework for the program. And I personally like to think of a Stewardship Agreement as creating a custom tailored version of the FPA, and it's specific to the landowner and their objectives, as well as the resources present on their property. These agreements are not tied to the land itself, but are an agreement between the landowner and the department. By department policy, forest landowners who choose not to enter into stewardship agreements are not considered any less protective of resources than those landowners who do choose. However, for those landowners that commit to take these additional measures that exceed what is otherwise required, the stewardship agreement provides the means to recognize those efforts. And in turn, the department commits to aid the landowner in accessing conservation programs and other incentive resources. A little bit on HFRP, the Healthy Forest Reserve Program, which is a voluntary federal program that aims to enhance forest ecosystems through the recovery of T&E species, improved biodiversity, and carbon sequestration. This program has been utilized in various ways in other states over the years. In Oregon, HFRP has had a focus on benefiting the northern spotted owl. During the years that this was available and funded, interested landowners had the option of enrolling in either a 10-year restoration agreement or a permanent easement. In either case, the landowner was able to receive cost share assistance for habitat enhancement practices, as well as the assistance in the development of a forest management plan. Further, this plan met the needs of a stewardship agreement and assured that HFRPs were implemented in compliance with the Forest Practices Act. So safe harbor agreements encourage private landowners to manage their land in ways that promote habitat for endangered species, simply by removing the regulatory disincentive. If the landowner's commitments and management actions are successful in attracting endangered species, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service absolves the landowner of any increased restrictions. Some safe harbor agreements are umbrella or programmatic, which means that the permit is issued to an intermediary, such as a state agency. In August 2010, the State Forest Reserve of Oregon, the NRCS, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service mutually agreed to a programmatic safe harbor agreement for the northern spotted owl. This programmatic agreement streamlined the enrollment of properties in safe harbor by authorizing the state forester to issue a certificate of inclusion in the safe harbor agreement, which was under an incidental take permit, which was held by ODF. And compliance was based on the provision and conservation measures detailed in an approved stewardship agreement. Currently, we have 13 active stewardship agreements. And during the next video segment, I'd like to showcase the Bowman Tree Farm as an example where a participating landowner has furthered their timber and conservation objectives by leveraging a stewardship agreement to access complementary incentive programs and collaborate with partner organizations.
When we moved here, and that's been about 15 years now, one of my real interests was looking at the habitats. One thing I tell kids when they come out, because we do a lot of tours, is that basically everything lives here except for wolves. So we have bear, we have elk, we have cougar, we have birds, we have salamanders, we have all literally the critters of diversity. There's a spotted owl nesting site on our neighbor's property. It might as well be on our property because it's right at the border. Currently, we don't know if the owl is there or not, but unless the owl is what's called decommissioned or the site is decommissioned, then we still have to operate exactly like the owl was there.
The spotted owls have been in decline for quite a while, and there's multiple reasons, but the main reason that this project was targeting was more of the habitat loss.
So we know that this type of forest, from science, is what owls like. They like these bigger trees. I believe there's also some science that's coming in that shows they like some other type of habitat maybe too. So what we're doing is creating lots of opportunities to entice in the owl to, you know, come here and live.
Part of the 2011 Spotted Owl Recovery Plan, one of the target goals was to come up with actions, voluntary programs to encourage private landowners to engage in voluntary conservation for spotted owls. And so part of that is the Spotted Owl Safe Harbor Agreement, which is an agreement that the Department of Forestry holds with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, where we're able to enroll properties, primarily small landowners, who want to engage in voluntary management.
So the HFRP Healthy Forest Reserve Program was an agreement that we entered into in 2013. It was a real opportunity for us to take part of our tree farm, 250 acres, and move that into a longer term forest, oftentimes known as old growth forests. And what an old growth forest to me means is the diversity of both horizontal and vertical habitat.
Even in second growth properties, like the Bowman's property here, where you have maybe a middle-aged stand of trees, so it's not old growth yet. There's still a lot that can be done to promote owl habitat through, for example, some commercial thinning to open up the canopy, which will help get sunlight to the forest floor and help develop that complexity in the layering. And then also some of what was done here on the Bowmans was to, on purpose, create dead trees and down wood. And that helps promote the prey populations for what owls need to eat.
So part of that agreement was taking out some logs because we wanted to bring in more sunlight, putting some snag creation for critters to come in, for the birds to utilize, downed wood, same thing, opportunity for habitat at the ground level.
And that allows us to mimic some of the key components of owl habitat earlier in when the stand is still a bit younger to help promote that owl habitat over time and help it develop quicker than maybe it would if we didn't do anything and just let the stand age on its own.
And what ODF has helped us to do is keep with our compliance and making sure that we're doing the right thing by Oregon's laws, and then helping us to, as I mentioned earlier, just know where to go to get assistance and how to make sure that we're moving our HFRP plan towards the goal that we want, which is bigger forests, bigger trees, and more habitat and more diversity.
And they're always looking to continuously improve what they do on their ground, and that's where we can also come in with stewardship foresters and things like that to assist.
The stewardship agreement program, either with or without the Healthy Forest Reserve program, is really helping to do good things on the landscape. It's essentially encouraging and rewarding landowners who are managing their land with conservation in mind. And so they're doing good things for wildlife already, or they want to do good things for wildlife. And we can work with them and help them figure out how to make that happen.
So the voluntary program's been great because it allows us to still maintain our land. We still own the trees. And it's the government who has the management plan, which is like a 100-year plus management plan. It's going great because we really get to now have an opportunity for the diversity that we like to have on our landscape, while we also still have the opportunity to make our money.
There's some certainty that this is going to be a working forest for decades to come, and that provides, you know, a variety of benefit to the public in general, from clean air and clean water, and you know, it's not going to be subdivided habitat for wildlife also. So some multiple benefits there moving forward.
I like this program a lot, and I think it's doing really good things on the landscape. It's a way to reward landowners for doing good things on their properties.
It's exciting. I think it's working really well. It's a great win-win.
So at this point, I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Lindsay Reeves with the Bowman Tree Farm and give her the opportunity to provide any clarification to the board, if you have any questions, and also to allow her to share their experiences in incorporating the various programs into the management of their family tree farm.
Great, thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? Wonderful. The other day when we did this, the sunlight was not quite as bright. I'm actually standing outside with an actual backdrop of the forest. So since this is a tour, I thought I'd try to bring the forest to you guys as much as possible. So again, my name is Lindsay Reeves, as was this morning's mention. Everybody kind of said where they're from. I'm a third generation Oregonian, and this Bowman Tree Farm has been in my husband's family, Tom Bowman, since 1945. Prior to us acquiring this land from homesteaders, there were other folks on this landscape. We actually have two special sites with grave sites dating back to 1900 and 1903. And so I just kind of like to always bring in the history, because this has been a working landscape, both from agricultural as well as for my husband's family, now going on three generations. And what I tell folks when they come out, we do a lot of tours through a nonprofit called Forests Today and Forever, is this is how we make our living. So one of the philosophies that I saw was on the sheet is, what is our management philosophy? And when I got my master's in social work and was trained as a clinical social worker, I really started to look at things as a system. And so, yes, this is how we make our money. It is a working tree farm. And part of that system, as you saw earlier, is a real importance that we hold towards this entire landscape as an ecosystem for the animals that live here, the water that flows through here. We have a small fish stream. And then as we do logging operations, soil and habitat at the ground level. I'm also a member of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association and Oregon Women in Timber, and am on the Forest Protection Association for Western Lane. So prior to living and coming here and inheriting this land, I had really no understanding about forestry. And just want to give a big heads up kudos to ODF, because they have been instrumental through the stewardship programs and working with me to further understand rules and regulations. And as was mentioned earlier, how to go above and beyond those rules and regulations. Some of the challenges that we're facing right now that was mentioned this morning also with climate change is we are for the most part just chasing dead and dying trees. There's a lot of Douglas fir on this landscape that are drought stressed. And it's our goal to get those trees out ASAP for forest health and bug beetle infestation abatement. What I have learned to appreciate with the HFRP, which is about a third of our landscape, we're 670 acres, and the Healthy Forest Reserve program is about 250 acres, is we're strategically leaving more downwood and snags in parts of the landscape that are outside that HFRP. Again, to promote that whole diversity of ecosystems for forest critters to come in that use those trees for snags and also then use that downed wood. Fire, as always, was talked about as well. So what we do is a huge program that we go through the landscape, get everything mowed, put in fire breaks. The last few years, I've been able to work with ODF and bring in their wildland fire crews, especially the new ones. And we do some tours on this tree farm where they're practicing their skills so that we're getting the landscape as ready as we can if fire were to approach, that we would be able to be our first response. We're really lucky as small woodland owners that we do own our own equipment. And so we're able to know that when we're monitoring fire season and we know fires are around, we can ready our landscape and our tools to get ready to approach that fire if it were to come this way. The last thing I just want to mention with some of our challenges is, as I said earlier, we do have a small fish stream, and we had our first culvert failure 2 years ago. And again, through the help of ODF, we brought in some stewardship foresters. We actually did a training on reassessing what kind of a culvert would need to be put in for the fish passage rules that we have. And what we came to was we started to decide to put in bridges instead of culverts. And that will allow that fish stream to naturally channelize itself. And in the long run, will be better for the fish and the other stream side habitats. One thing I guess I will just close with, as was mentioned, we bring out kids and we do tours out here. We've brought out over 10,000 kids in the last 10 years, mostly middle school students, as well as University of Oregon students. And especially with the U of O students, they write a journal, and with permission from the professor, he will share what the students write about their experience. And the one thing that is almost to a T in every journal is students saying, A, I had no idea how complex forest management is. And B, I had no idea how much people care. So I'm starting to work on my own theory about forest literacy. And really, as again, this morning was mentioned, is we need to get people on the landscape and have actual tours, having conversations with people and recognizing that, you know, every acre can be different. And after experiencing the ice and the snowstorms over the last few years, recognizing that my management plan and objectives can change literally overnight. So to bring it back to the HFRP, working with ODF, working with NRCS, and really understanding how to manage a landscape, both for the financial gains that I get when I sell my trees to the mills, as well as how to work with the habitat and the stream health and the overall health of the forest, has been very beneficial. Because I didn't come from a forestry background, but feel like I have a pretty good understanding now of how to make some good decisions. So we are at, I don't know where we're at with time. I think there's time for questions.
Okay. I've got one. Congratulations on everything you've done. Can you maybe try to describe, if you did not have the help from NRCS and ODF, where things would stand today?
Yeah, and that's a whole other kind of historical question that I'll try to answer briefly. So as you probably know, or maybe don't know, small woodland owners, when a generation passes and it goes to the next family members, they can be put into a quandary, to say the least, where one person or sibling might want to do one thing and one person might want to do the other. So my husband's passionate about the tree farm. He's worked here for years with his dad. The other brother went to Canada and basically said, no, thank you. When the inheritance came, parents died 4 months apart, the land and the timber was given to each brother 50-50. And brother in Canada wanted his money. So we were looking at how can we buy him out. And we, through a process, were basically deciding to put ourselves on a 5-year timber project of taking out 1.1 million board feet a year, which was quite an increase from our normal 250,000 board feet a year. Tom had reached out to NRCS to ask if there was any money for this HFRP, and at that point there wasn't. And lo and behold, it was 6 years later, we got a phone call. Are you interested? Yes, we were. We went through the process, and what that money literally came at the right time to pay off Tom's brother so that we did not have to continue 4 more years of that 1.1 million board foot harvesting. So if that money wouldn't have come through, not only would we not have this great 250 acres moving towards the old growth spotted owl habitat, but we would have had to cut beyond sustainability, whatever it is, 5.6 million board feet, which would have taken the sustainability concept off this tree farm. We also could have sold. We could have divided it up and sold it out, and that would have not led us to then have the acreage that we now currently have so that we can manage it for the different values that we hold, financial, habitat, things of that nature. So I don't know if that really answered the question you were asking.
Oh, that's a great answer. Congratulations.
It would have changed. It would have changed this landscape completely. Yes. And the 40 acres that we did harvest happened right when we were starting to get into those drought conditions. And that 40 acres has been a very challenging reharvestation because it's low soil productivity, high wind. It's up on the ridge system. And I think we went up there 4 years and replanted trees that had been, that just didn't make it. We've actually now started planting incense cedars, and those are really thriving. So from my imagination of having 40 acres for the next 5 years to reforest would have been financially difficult as well as physically challenging.
Other questions?
So thank you, Nate, Lindsay, and Jennifer, for that tour stop.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks. It's a really highlight of the Safe Harbor Agreement, stewardship agreements. And then I've been on your farm many years ago as deputy division chief for one of your school tours. And that's a great program you run as well.
Oh, thank you. And going back to Dave Lorenz, if anybody wants a tour or wants to come out during a forest field day with 150 middle school kids, just let me know.
It's worth it, let me tell you.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing that story of your forest. It sounds amazing. And I also had a question for the rest of you of how available is this funding stream, or what is the health of this funding stream that was drawn on for this project for other landowners?
Thanks for that, Ben. So the Healthy Forest Reserve Program, I think, had funding for a year or two. And it's since, at least that program has since dried up. So there are other incentive programs, cost share programs that you'll hear a little bit more about, particularly when Jeff talks, but this one in particular is no longer available. So
and that was Jennifer, through the farm bill? that it was funded? Is that correct?
It was funded through the Farm Bill. And the interesting, I guess, part of that history too, the way that I understand it, is it was a 2008 and the money had dried up in Oregon. States that did not use their monies, it goes back to the federal government, and then the federal government reallocates those fundings. And so Oregon got money back, and that's where we were then contacted. But yeah, it is the Farm Bill, and I agree. I don't believe that money's available right now, unfortunately.
I'm just curious about the cost share. What was the percentage of cost share in that program?
Nate's going to come and speak to that. I think I know the answer. I think it's 75-25, but.
In that era, and Lindsay, correct me if you recall it differently, but.
I have to go back in my notes, but go ahead.
It was like I said in my presentation, they had a couple of options on whether to do a 10-year restoration agreement or the permanent easement. And so I believe if you selected, and I don't know if we had any that actually, any of our participants that chose the 10-year option, but it was like closer to a 50-50 in that scenario. And then in the permanent easement scenario, it was basically 100%.
And yeah, my understanding is they calculated the difference between with and without the easement based on what you could do versus what was under the management plan. And so it was like a traditional easement program where they compensated the landowner for the value that they gave up. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's, thanks for jogging my memory. We received an initial payment with the understanding that we had to do prescriptions in the first 3 years to help kind of jumpstart it towards the habitat. So creation of downed wood, creation of snags, removal of enough trees to make 70% canopy cover. And we got paid those first 3 years for so much per snag, so much per downed wood. Now that we've received the initial money for the loss of the timber, because the timber is now going to stay and grow on the land, and we've received money for those prescriptions, we are now obligated to continue that 100-year management plan with no compensation from the government. So as we move, they've actually outlined 5 units from small trees to larger trees to reserve. And we will be doing prescriptions ongoing to get the middle-aged forest into older forest, thinning, more creation of downwood and snags over time.
Any other questions?
I guess want to also add to that cost component in that we still own the timber. And so as we're doing pre-commercial thinning, commercial thinning, we will take those to the mills and get paid for them just like we would normally get paid for harvesting. Part of this 100-year plan also is the creation of small patch cuts. So like 1 acre, 2 acre, because we want to create those edges and bring in that new kind of early cereal forest as well. So we'll be going in and doing that harvesting as well.
Great. Well, that was educational and informational. So thank you all for that presentation.
You're very welcome.